this service this morning. We have a good crowd. Appreciate the presence of every one of you. A lot of you have been present in every one of these services in the mornings, and I want to take this opportunity today to tell you how much I appreciate that. And I had asked early on that you do that, and you've responded to that request, and I appreciate it a lot, and I hope you have enjoyed these meetings in the morning time just half as much as I have. I know we've talked about some things that are not real popular with a lot of people, but hopefully we have talked about some things that will help us all. And we've tried to use the proper attitude and spirit as we approach these things. I hope that I've done that, and I think most of you feel like that we've been able to do that, and surely these things will be a source of strength and encouragement to us all and help us in our homes. I think we can all understand the value and the importance of Christian homes, and you and I will do the best that we can to contribute to a good influence among Christian people and homes in our communities and a good influence throughout the world. We've had a lot of visitors who have come and stayed and have been here, and we appreciate that. It's just been a wonderful meeting so far as I'm concerned, and I hope that you have the same feeling about the meeting that I do. And it isn't over. There are other things to come, and I hope that we'll all be participants in those services that remain and in the activities that have been planned for the church. Brother Zane asked me this morning, said, what would be a good song to lead before we discuss the subject, why marriages fail? And I'm not sure if it's in this book, but you know, there are some of the books that we have. There's a song entitled, The Fight Is On. That may have been an appropriate song, I'm not sure. Of course, it doesn't have to do with the Christian home, but without a doubt in our minds, there are problems in many homes in America today. And did you know that the divorce rate in, throughout America is one in every three marriages will fail? And in some sections of the country, two in every three will fail. And that's a pretty high rate for broken homes, so far as I'm concerned, throughout our country. And there must be some reasons why that these homes fall apart. And I'd just like to talk to you today, not because I feel like that your home is about to be broken up. Over in the area where we live, in a little community east of Cordell, a little town of Corn, I don't know how many of you are familiar with that. There are a lot of German-Dutch people there. And their language is a little different. Their phraseology is different than ours sometimes. And instead of saying something is going to fall apart, they'll say it's going to come from together. And I think that's what happens to a lot of our homes in America today. They come from together. And then, of course, husbands and wives suffer, and not only that, but as we mentioned one service earlier this week, probably the children in those homes are the ones that suffer the most. And when we see this going on in the world today, it just creates a question in my mind, why do we have such a high rate of failure in marriages and broken homes? And I've listed a number of reasons here today. And I want to just talk to you about some of these things, and I'm going to try to do that in a quiet, gentle way and take care of my voice and just talk to you about some things today that I want you to consider and think about. Now, these should be things that might help you if you have any problems in your home, or it might help you ward off problems that might come later on, or maybe there would be things that would help you as you deal with other people. You know, there are a lot of people that are going to come to you and ask you for help in problems that they have in their homes. And this is especially true with preachers. When I was working in the bank, it wasn't unusual for people to come into my office. And, of course, when I saw them coming, I thought they were coming to talk about financial needs. But many of them would come and they'd sit down in the privacy of an office and talk about problems that they had in their homes. I had a lady come in one day and just really poured out her heart about the problems that they were having in their family. And she said, Truman, I know that we don't go to the same church, but she said, I have a lot of confidence in you as a person. And I felt like that I could come and talk to you in confidence, and maybe you could tell me some things that would help me. I appreciated the confidence that she had placed in me. And I remember one of the things that I told her during this conversation was that it's hard for a person who has not had the problem to know exactly what they would do. And they'll tell you their problems, and then they'll say, now what would you do in this circumstance? Fortunately, Stella and I have not had those problems. Now, we may have had a lot of problems in a lot of ways, but we haven't had a problem with our marriage. And you know, if you haven't experienced those problems, you might think that you'd know what you would do, but you might not always do that. Now, I realize up front there are some things that are right and there are some things that are wrong. You, me, or anyone else shouldn't have a problem in knowing what to do with right and wrong. But in areas where judgment comes into play, sometimes it's pretty hard to know what would be the best thing to do in a particular case. That's like a person saying, you know, if that was a child of mine, I'd wear them out. And sometimes that comes from people that don't have any children. And then later on, when they have children, it doesn't work out that way at all. So experience is a dear teacher. And we need to remember that. But when we have certain information at hand, we perhaps would be able to intelligently advise and admonish and direct people in some of the things that they need to do. Now, I've listed 8 or 9 reasons here why marriages fail, and we'll cover as many of those as we have time to cover this morning. Number one, I think one of the great causes is the fact that what you expect is not what you get in marriage. Now, we're living in a society when people have come to expect a lot of things from marriage and the establishing of a home. Some people expect marriage to be like what they see on television. And usually what is shown on television, in many cases, is the bright side of a marriage life and is not always showing the other side. One of the reasons why we don't get what we expect is because real-life parents have a tendency to color the expectations. You know, we have learned to enjoy the relationship of husband and wife, and we tell our children, you know, this is going to be the best thing that's ever happened to you. And it's going to change your life in such a great way that you just can't believe all of the good things that will come to you because of your marriage relationship. And you know, whether it's a son or a daughter, they just immediately come to expect a lot of things that they really may not get when they get married. You know, if your father always carried out the garbage, then you think that all husbands ought to do that. If your father has attended to the needs of your mother, you're going to expect now that your husband do the very same thing for you, aren't you, young lady? Because that's kind of the example that you've seen. And what you have been taught in your home life, and it may not always be that way with other people. You know, every home and every person in that home doesn't always perform the same way. And with the young men as well. If your mother has always cooked a hot breakfast every morning, you know, the young man probably is going to expect that his wife will do the same thing. And he may really be shocked when he gets up some morning and she tells him, now, if you want some breakfast, you find it. Or she may tell him that you have a real choice for breakfast this morning. You can have post toasties, you can have Cheerios, you can have all bran. You really have a choice. And it may not be like mother's cooking. And I think that's a real problem for some of the young married couples in America today, because when they get out in real life, away from the shelter of their home and the habits of their parents, they have a lot of adjustments to make, and every young man and woman is not able to make that adjustment. So you need to think about that, young men and women, before you get into a marriage relationship, that there's going to be a lot of adjustments that will need to be made, and you need to be mentally prepared to make those adjustments. Number two, Many marriages falter, and many of them fail because of the lack of communication. You need to learn to express your feelings. You need to learn to talk about things that bother you. It's pretty easy for a person to keep feelings harbored up inside. And the first thing you know, these feelings grow a little stronger and a little stronger and a little greater and a little greater. And after a while, there's a bit of explosion where if there could have been some communication all along, probably those little problems could have been worked out. You can't always tell from a person's behavior what they're thinking about. Now, some people you can. That's pretty evident in some people, what they're thinking about, because it's exemplified in the lives that they live and the things that they do, but that's not true with every person. And I want to encourage every prospective bride and groom and every young husband and wife today to learn to communicate. I have been called to counsel with so many people that I have seen little things from what they told me build up in their lives until they come to a point of almost no return at all. And they were such trivial things that if they had been talked about and worked out, would never have been a problem. But they let those build up until they were. Did you know, and I'm talking about those of us who are older today even, just the little things sometimes can just gnaw and eat us on the inside. And I think of one of those being bitterness. You know, sometimes a little thing that's a very small problem to start with can create bitterness within our hearts about many things. I think most of you here today know some of the problems that Stella and I have experienced in the past 6 years. And they become very minor problems when we think of material things as compared to our spiritual relationship to God. But as I talk to a lot of other people, and I talk to a lot of attorneys about this very same thing, I said, you know, of all the losses that we may have had, one of the things that I have prayed most about is that I could be freed from bitterness. You know, bitterness will eat you up. And it doesn't make any difference if you're bitter to your banker or your doctor or your attorney or your wife or your husband. And you know, bitterness is classed right along with a lot of pretty ugly sins. But what I think about it doing is it eats within us and creates attitudes and dispositions and finally causes us to make decisions that we wouldn't have made under any other circumstance at all. So that's why you, as husband and wife, need to communicate. If you've got a problem, talk about it. If your husband has a habit that you don't like, talk to him about it. You don't have to be mean and ugly about it. Just talk to him gently and humbly and kindly about something that's annoying you. Or husbands, if your wives are doing things that are upsetting you, don't try to muscle your way through a situation. Communicate. Talk about it. It hasn't been too long ago till Stella got after me about a little problem that I had. Well, I didn't think it was a problem. I just talked too long at church. And you know, that's pretty poor judgment sometimes on the part of us as speakers to preach too long. But you know, we hadn't hardly gotten in the car and left until she talked to me about that. She didn't get mean about it. I didn't get turned all wrong side out about it, and it's probably helped me in a lot of ways. And you know, Jack, if I could ever find anything that was wrong with her, it'd just do me good to return the favor, see? But the important thing is to communicate and talk about things that bother you. Number three, Another reason that many marriages are failing in this generation is because of alcoholism, drug addiction, and physical abuse. I doubt that that would be a problem with homes that are represented in this assembly today. But stranger things have happened. We don't always know. But I'll just tell you, men and women today, and you know anymore, alcoholism and drug addiction is not only in men, but also in women. And it's probably going to cause problems in the home. You know, in the past, women couldn't leave an abusive husband because she didn't have anywhere to go. I don't think it was unusual in the past for fathers to tell their daughters when they married, and for parents to tell their sons when they married, you're out on your own, and if you have problems, you take care of them. You don't come running home with your problems. And a lot of women didn't have anywhere to go. If their husband was abusive to them, many of them just had to take it, or certainly have nowhere at all to go. It's not like that in this generation. We now have centers for battered women who can just walk out. They don't have to take that anymore. And as I mentioned yesterday morning, there is no woman that should have to suffer that kind of abuse from men. But you know, because of that, many marriages fail. Homes are broken up, which used to. They may have stayed together. They may not have been good Christian home, nor good environment for children to be reared in such an environment. But at the same time, the homes were more or less together, and today this is not true. And I suppose alcoholism and drug addiction is causing many divisions in home today. I heard the story of a man who would come home drunk every night and was very abusive to his wife. I don't know if I'll tell this story in the assembly of the church or not, but it's going to express a point real well. And she got tired of that, and she had talked to many people about it. Talked to the doctor, talked to the attorney, just talked to everybody because she was getting tired of it. And so someone suggested, why don't you use reverse psychology on him? When he's abusive to you, instead of you trying to beat him up when he comes home, why don't you be good to him? And reverse the psychology. She thought she might try that. And one night he came home and he was having a hard time finding the place. And when he did, he comes stumbling to the door. And she met him on the outside. And she was dressed in her prettiest nightgown and had put on the loudest perfume that she had. And she greeted him on the sidewalk and said, honey, said, let me help you. Said, why don't you come in? And come in and let's just go to bed and rest for the night. And he said, well, I guess I just will, because I'm going to get beat up when I get home anyway. Wouldn't you hate to have to live like that with a husband that came home drunk every night? Wouldn't you hate to live with a wife that had drug addiction or alcoholism to the point that she couldn't be a wife to you or a mother to your children? I think that many of you remember a few years ago when we had a brotherhood meeting over at Altus. And my subject was church leadership. And I mentioned the fact that the elders and deacons and preachers and those who were in the lead of church teaching and counseling needed to be prepared for a different generation that we had commonly been aware of or accustomed to. Because we were going to be dealing with homes that were broken because of these very reasons. Children that had been addicted to drugs, many of them gone through rehabilitation centers. We were going to be dealing with people who were members of single-parent homes, or many of them no-parent homes. And our environment is so much different today. And we need to be as well prepared as we can to handle some of these problems. Number four, Many marriages fail because of in-law problems. People often have problems because they have not separated themselves from their families. Remember in the beginning of this study on Monday, he said, "For this cause shall man leave his father and his mother, shall cleave unto his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh." In-laws are not always a problem, but many times they are a problem. And husbands and wives, whichever the case is, you need to be able to separate yourself from your parents and dedicate yourself to your companion and your home. And let me tell you today, fathers and mothers, we need to allow them to do that. It's not just the difficulty of adjusting to a new life, but also sometimes the unwillingness of families to let us go. And sometimes that creates a problem within a home until the marriage fails. I suppose I had one of the best mother-in-laws and father-in-laws that a person could have, and I'm sure that many of you feel the same way today about your in-laws. That was never a problem for us. I don't believe Stella ever had a problem with her in-laws. In fact, I always thought my dad petted her a little too much. Sometimes that's a problem. That was never a problem with us. But in many cases, it is. I told my mother-in-law one day, I said, "You know, I believe that Adam should have been the happiest man who ever lived." She kind of got interested in that. And she said, "Why do you think that he should have been so happy?" And I said, "He didn't have a mother-in-law." And this is the kind of relation we had. And she'd dig me just as much as I would her. But you know, everyone is not as fortunate to have the in-laws that many of us have. And it creates a problem, and sometimes marriages fail because of it. Number five, sometimes marriages fail because we marry the wrong person. Now, how are you going to know when you marry the right person or not? Usually, we marry the wrong person either to please our parents or to displease them. That happens a lot of times. You know, we marry somebody because mother and daddy liked them and they thought we ought to. Said they're a good family, they'll make a good Christian companion, and you ought to become interested in them. And that may be true, and that may not be the best thing that could happen. Or sometimes parents get involved to the point that a son or a daughter will marry someone just for spite. And oh, I think that would be the most terrible mistake that any of us could make. Last year, Stella and I were called on to counsel with a young lady. We counseled with the young lady's boyfriend. And we counseled with the young lady's parents. And more than one time. And I think these parents had an attitude that was about to drive that young lady to do a thing that she would be sorry for the rest of her life that she ever did. And you know, it's pretty hard when you have to sit down and tell Christian parents, "You're doing the wrong thing, you made a mistake." Christian parents usually are the ones who make good decisions and do the right things. But I'll tell you what, this couple had gotten pretty mean about what they were doing. And we had to tell them that some of the things that they had done were wrong. Well, you know, sometimes that strains your relationship with the people that you're counseling with. But as I said earlier, there are some things that are just right or wrong. I'm thankful that they accepted that advice. They changed their attitude and the way that they were treating the young lady. And you know, it wasn't too long until she was seeing the young man only about one time a week. And then it wasn't too long until she wasn't keeping company with him anymore. And he was not a good example of a Christian gentleman. They were so happy when that broke up. But do you know what she was about to do? They had driven her to the point that she was just about to become the young man's wife. And because of their actions, I told him one day, I said, you're going to have to decide whether you want him to be or her to be his wife or your daughter. Because that's the decision that you're forcing her to make. And this year they told Stella and me how much they had appreciated what we had done and all the good we did. And I don't know if we did that much good or the fact that we were able to make them aware of some of the responsibilities that they had and some of the things that they were doing wrong. Now, young people today, let me tell you, don't ever let your parents drive you to marry someone that you really don't want to marry and do it just for spite. That's the wrong reason. And the chances are very good that your marriage will not last under those circumstances. Now, I know there are exceptions to the rule. I have seen marriages that look like should have been the very best, where both couples came from Christian homes and they had been encouraged to meet each other and they got to dating and they married and it looked like the best example of Christian home that could have been founded. And end in the divorce courts and fighting over children. So, you know, with the best scenario, sometimes things don't work out. I mentioned Samson the other day. You know, his parents were concerned about him even before he was born. And they prayed to the Lord, teach us what we shall do unto the child that shall be born unto us. They wanted to get ready for him. They said, teach us how we shall do unto him and how we shall order his life. You talk about being born with a gold spoon in your mouth. It looks to me like he had the very best advantages to be born into a God-fearing home, because Manoah with his wife were God-fearing people and they served the Lord. And so Samson turned out to be a renegade, didn't he? Delilah? Harlots? And you know, he just couldn't get out of one problem until he was right back into another problem. Sometimes when you have an opportunity, turn back and read what it cost him. It cost him his sight. It cost him his reputation. It cost him his parents. When he did grind in the prison wall, there was no mother's voice to comfort him. There was no father's hand that could help him and lift him up. There were no friends anymore that would come and help him. He was there alone in the prison. Can you imagine? Finally, it cost him his life. And you know, the Bible said that he slew more people in his death than he did in his living. But what accomplishment is that? Misery loves company, doesn't it? We had a hailstorm over in Oklahoma one time, and I was kind of mouthing around because it had hailed our cotton pretty bad. And one fellow told me, you know, he said, well, there's a lot of other people that are in the same situation. Well, that didn't solve my problem. It's because a lot of other people got hailed out too. And I was whining around about it, and he said, well, one thing is true, it won't help to cry. And I said, well, I cried, and it helped a little bit. You see, we have a problem when we do things for spite, or when we do things just to please others. And in the selection of a companion, I want all of you young people to accept the counsel and the advice of your fathers and mothers, but don't ever marry someone solely for the reason to please them or to displease them. Because your marriage is going to start with a problem. I don't want you to turn your back or your minds against the counsel and the advice that they give, but consider it as that because they have had experience and they know many of the things that you're going to learn later. So accept their experience and profit by their mistakes very early on. Again, some marriages fail because people grow and change at different rates.
You know, when young people get married, they usually have a lot of changing in their lives to do, and they have a lot of adjustments to make, and sometimes people have a lot of growing up to do.
I think that was the case with me. I was just a kid of a boy, and I had a lot of growing up to do. I mentioned before that Stella and I had an opportunity to grow up with our children. I think that happens, but people sometimes grow at a different rate, and I hear people saying, well, you know, maybe he or maybe she'll grow up one of these days. Well, that's probably true. And we need to have some patience and some tolerance while this is going on. No marriage stays the same over the years. There will be a lot of changes take place, and the question is, do the changes strengthen the marriage or do they fracture it? There were a lot of changes that had to take place in our home when Stella and I married. I think she told someone here the other day, if she'd have known that old Truman was going to be a preacher, she might have considered before she married him. But you see, I wasn't preaching full-time when we married. In fact, I'd only made a few talks locally. And then you know how these things get started. And then it's turned out that most of the past 42 years I have been involved, either full-time or much of the time, in the preaching of the gospel. Hey, that was a lot of difference than she had been used to. That wasn't the environment that she came up in. And you know, those kind of changes can either strengthen a marriage or they can fracture that marriage. And I have people telling me, you know, he's just not the fellow that I married. And I think that's true. I think a lot of times women have men today that were not the men that they married, because they have not been able to handle and adjust to the changes that come along. So you need to be ready for that, prospective brides and grooms, or young husbands and wives. You need to consider that, and then you need to work out these changes. And I think in every case, with the proper communication and good understanding about the problems that may arise, adjustments can be made that will strengthen your home every day that you live. I don't think there's a thing in the world that could have torn our marriage apart. But more than that, I believe it would be harder to do today than it would have been 40 years ago. And I suspect that you can find people here today that would tell you the same thing, because you grow closer and more tightly knit together, and there's just nothing that could tear you apart. Number 7, marriage is often failed because of the fighting about money. That's a real problem in our lives in many areas. You know, money's important. It's important at home. It's important in the workplace. It's important in the business. It's important at church. It's a very important commodity to us all. I may talk about this a little bit in one of my lessons that I have planned before the end of the meeting. I'll tell you now, it shouldn't be our God. It is not the pearl of great price. And I don't plan to use that sermon, Jay, if you have any ideas about that. But people's values are different. You know, sometimes a young lady or a young man comes from a home that has handled money altogether differently, and they have different concepts about money. One partner may pay the bills on time, never buy on credit, and always live within the budget. The other partner may not do that at all. Maybe they have an easy-come, easy-go attitude, and it's exactly extreme and opposite to what the other one has. Now, that could be a problem. It doesn't have to be. Because through communication and adjustment, those problems can be worked out. And this is another time when you need to talk about it. And if there are some problems over handling the finances of the home, there ought to be communication. And certainly if we are Christian husbands and wives, that wouldn't be a problem with us. A lot of people say, you know, the next time I'm going to marry somebody that's rich. I tell you what, the next time you'll have some problems too. Because they're just out there, and we're going to encounter them. One or two more, and then I'm going to close.
One of the reasons that marriages fail is because that society has changed its attitude and rules about marriage. We're living in a world when half of the divorces are initiated by women.
Now you think about that.
50% of all the divorces are initiated by women. You talk to some of the older people here today and they'll tell you that when they were young, they never heard about a woman filing for divorce.
It didn't work that way, did it?
But you see, it's easier now for women to become independent and strong enough to get along without a man. They can go out into the marketplace and they can find a job and they can work and they provide for themselves. That was not true several years ago. So the surroundings, the environment, and our attitude about these things has changed all around us, and so it begins to affect us too. And many homes today are broken and marriages fail because of this lenient attitude about marriage in the world. And finally, divorce is easier to get and is no longer a disgrace. It's not a problem to get a divorce. Look at your television. It doesn't even cost you much money anymore to get a divorce. And I saw an advertisement the other day. Some of these things just tear me up, Jack. You could get a divorce or you could file bankruptcy for about $68. And that allows a lot of people to avoid obligation and responsibility that they have taken upon themselves. Now, I don't want to leave the wrong impression about divorce or about protection from creditors that is permitted through the laws of our nation in a court of bankruptcy. I don't want to leave the wrong impression at all. But I'm just saying that it is so easy for people to do that there are a lot of people that are not like you and me that have certain values that would forbid us to do these things. But it doesn't bother them at all, and on a wholesale basis, that's why the average is so high in America that maybe in some cases 2 out of 3 marriages fail. The mechanics of divorce has been simplified. Not too big a problem. Just tell the court that you're incompatible. You know, we just weren't made for each other. We still want to be good friends, but, you know, we just were not meant for each other in the home. First thing you know, it's $68. It's all over. And it's not a disgrace anymore. And some of you older people remember back a few years ago when if a home was broken up, we thought that was just about the worst thing that ever happened. You can remember that, can't you? It's not that way anymore. Generally accepted in the social world. So if you get married and you don't like it, get out of it. Get into another one. Not Christians, not people of God. And I want to tell you today that splitting up can be morally, emotionally, financially, and spiritually devastating. And if you don't believe that, just talk to the people that have tried it. We had some friends in our community. The lady came and talked to Stella and me one day. She and her husband were having some real problems. They were not members of the church. They were just friends in the community. In fact, they were pretty big in a denominational church there in the little town of Deal City. She said, Truman, I need some help.
And sometimes it's really hard to help people. But one of the things that I told her was that you or your husband either cannot stand the expense of a divorce. They had some assets. They had a few resources around them. But I said, wipe you both out. And you need to think about that among many other reasons. And that's why I've listed here today that it is morally, emotionally, financially, and spiritually devastating. And people who, under what they thought were the allowable reasons for divorce and remarriage, still had problems in many of these areas. So before you involve yourselves in problems and difficulties, you need to think about that. And as I've said so many times this week, just let a word of the wise be sufficient. I haven't talked about these things because I thought you had problems in your home. If you do, this will be good information for you. If it don't, it will help you as you visit and talk to other people. And young men and women today who are considering marriage, you think about these things. And then when you make your choice, you be sure that you choose the right companion. And fathers and mothers, you be sure that you give the proper advice. And you do it as a counselor and an advisor and not try to put pressures on your children to do the things that you want done. Week before last, a young lady came to me and she said, Truman, I'm wanting to go away to school. And she said, I would like for you to recommend a good school for me. She said, I have a good job and I'm making money, but I need to complete my education. And I said, well, I suppose that you don't want to go out of state to do that. And fortunately or unfortunately, we were in Texas when we were talking about it. And I was thinking about a couple of very fine universities in the state of Oklahoma. And she said, I think it's too expensive for me to go out of state. And I asked her if she had considered Texas Tech University in Lubbock. And the reason we talked about this was because of the church. And I said, we have a very fine congregation of people there where you could worship and you could be happy, and there are many other young people there. And she said, yes, I've considered that. But she said, my mother has asked me not to go. And she said, if you go, I won't write to you. I won't come to see you. I won't call you on the telephone. You know, the young lady's 26 years old. Parents, we need to think about some of the advice that we give and the counsel that we offer and the threats that we make. Now, this didn't have to do with marriage, but it had to do with a very, I thought, important decision in the young lady's life. Now, I got my neck stuck away out there. I told her, I said, you make up your mind what you need to do and what you think is best for you. And then if I need to, I'll help you with your mother. It may take you and me and everybody else to help with her mother, but you see, communication sometimes does some wonderful things. I hope all of these studies that we've had this week will help to strengthen our Christian homes, that it will help our relation to our children, and it will help the relation of our children to us, and that we can all work together in our physical homes, and that it'll help us as we work together as a family of God. If you're here this morning, you're subject to the invitation. You're not a Christian and you want to obey the gospel this morning, we'd like to help you do that. If you've been a Christian and you're away from the church and you need the prayers of the brethren in your behalf, we'd like to pray with you and pray for you. An invitation song has been selected, and I've talked a little longer than I had intended to, and I believe I'll ask that we sing two stanzas of this song, the first and the last. And if you need to come, will you come while we stand to sing?